Hi, I'm Ed Horwich, and this is the ProDig Podcast. ProDig is the email forum for professionals discussing issues about the digital image. For news and information on how to join the email list, which is free, go to the website prodig.org. Well, this weekend, the organisers of Look07 very kindly invited me to their two-day symposium, The Democratic Image. There was a great lineup of speakers there, and their keynote speaker on the first day was Pedro Meyer. Pedro is very well known for his website, Zone Zero, which, as you may know, is one of the most visited photography websites in the world. Now then, the audience came from all over the world as well, as far as I could see, a mixture of photographers and academics, and it was a very thought-provoking and very entertaining weekend of talks about the image. So, over the next few weeks, I'm going to present to you a series of podcasts taken from those presentations. I think they're going to be very enjoyable, and we're going to kick off today with that keynote speech by Pedro Meyer. So, let's have a listen.
Well, good morning to all of you. Nice to be here. First of all, let me thank all of you who have organized so splendidly this event. I'm thoroughly impressed. I think that it's a real honor and privilege to be here. I had two choices, to give the lecture in Spanish or in English. And I was told it was more democratic to make it in English, as more of you would understand it. It has been said that democracy is the worst form of government, except all the others that have been tried. Winston Churchill. I've heard over and over in many parts of the world how new digital technologies have an unfair distribution as they follow a pattern according to wealth. Well, how could we disagree with such a fundamental reality as it applies in our case to photography and new technologies? We can't, can we? Let's look at this with a bit more skepticism and insight, as this can actually lead us onto something beyond simple truism. I would like to say that this lack of equality is not only true with regard to photography and new technologies, but also with regard to access to water, to health care, to education, and so on. So how on earth would someone come up with a statement singling out photography and new technologies from matters that are so much more pressing for the survival of a human being? Here on the screen, when I took this picture some 30-odd years ago, this pipe was going through this area of Mexico City, which had several thousands of people living there who didn't have water. And the pipe was bringing water to a football stadium so that they could water the lawn. Well, the people just drilled into that and took water out, as you can see here. As you might agree, it does not make a lot of sense to make such an issue about the inequality of distribution, about photography and new technologies, when in fact more important factors that have not been remotely resolved for democratic access to all the well-being of all mankind. With this in mind, I think we can move beyond such rhetoric, as I'm sure that in this symposium we shall probably not be able to resolve outright any of these basic inequalities. However, we can contribute indirectly in many new ways to make such a destiny less inevitable. Just this morning, as I wrote this paper in Mexico a few days ago, the mayor of Mexico City announced that within 3 years, all parks and schools in the city will be wired with Wi-Fi connections that are going to be free for everyone to access. What has not been commented upon is who is going to be in those parks with a laptop, as there is no guarantee, forget about adequate connections to the internet, that you will come out of the park with your own computer. When giving a kiss to your girlfriend can lead to having corrupt policemen arrest you or have you mugged at gunpoint. As you might observe, equal access to the internet does not resolve more basic problems in our society. I can imagine such issues look differently when viewed from Manchester than they do from Mexico City. Just a few years ago, the most impoverished areas of Mexico City all would steal their electricity, as you can see in the image. So here, in this new digital era, we're going to be wired now in different ways. You can see the cables going there. So talking about benchmarks, look at this. I found this bench made out of stone back in 1974 when I made the image. And during a recent visit to that same area, I discovered to my big surprise that I had found that same stone only 34 years later. But before we move to the next image, let me point out some things within the image. Observe, please, the roof is made from compressed cardboard. Keep in mind the distance from the front wall to the bench, and look at the lack of sidewalk. Now look at this image here, 34 years later, and the front wall has moved up to where the bench was. There is now a roof made out of concrete, and they're in the process of adding a second floor, and there is a sidewalk. Progress is inevitable, and indeed there it is. One of the neighbors had added color to his front wall, and indeed some of the neighbors had done very well for themselves. They remained living in the same neighborhood that they grew up in, and some people left the area. Although some people left the area, many remained and improved it. Just remember how that place looked not too long ago. Well, I'm here to report to you some news that give us reason to believe that there is room for some optimism. We have Coca-Cola all over the planet. This, of course, is an item to consider for those who are after the fact that everyone should have equal access across the globe. I'm sure you get the point that the notion that suggests that for everyone to have access to something cannot be construed as democracy of any sort. Having as ubiquitous a product as a Coca-Cola does not necessarily equal democracy, now does it? Of course, I shall remain constrained in my observations to the realm which I am really familiar with, and that is the various iterations of photography. So let us start with something as basic and that has to do with the cost of film. I believe it's pretty democratic price when the cost of film has come down to zero. That sort of makes it quite accessible if that would be the only ingredient to consider. But you and I know that cameras do cost something, while the rest of the equipment in the form of required infrastructure also needs to be accounted for. However, the continuous fall in prices for all the gear needed to make pictures gives us a lot of hope to add to the zero price for film. The ongoing erosion in prices was last reported to be a fall of 30% year to year over the last few years. This being true for cameras and ancillary digital tools, if the digital prices would be referenced, let us say, to a Rolls-Royce automobile, such a car could be today sold for the equivalent of a pack of cigarettes. Such has been the scale of reduction in the relationship of prices to what you can get for your money today. I still recall purchasing one of the first hard drives, a 10 megabyte Jasmine hard drive in the mid-80s. I thought that drive would last until my great-grandchildren would want to play with such stuff. It cost me, at the time, $2,000, which would bring it to $200 per megabyte. Well, today a megabyte of hard disk bought at your local Apple store looks like this. A Lassie 250 gigabyte hard drive costs less than $100. That would be 4 cents a megabyte. Need I say more? And this price is even going to be reduced by an order of magnitude similar in proportions over the coming 20 years. Now, this example is not unique. It can be cross-referenced almost across the globe with regard to anything related to new technologies and photography. As economics play such an important factor in the distribution of anything, with the intention of a more democratic participation, one can safely say that digital technologies play one of the key roles in making information about the world more accessible to people all over the world. I would like to point out some noticeable examples of these trends. Raúl Ortega, one of my colleagues in Mexico, a photographer living in the state of Chiapas, produced a body of work that I found to be outstanding. A traditional book with his images was published in black and white, printed in Spain. The edition was 4,000 copies, sponsored by the state of Chiapas. 4 years later, half the edition was still unsold, basically due to the poor distribution of books, which is not something of an exception in his case. In Zone Zero, however, we undertook to publish that same book in electronic PDF format and to offer it for free to our viewers for a period of 30 days. During that time, 24,000 books were downloaded. I'm sure that there were a lot of people who got access from countries that the printed book could have never even reached, let alone that their pocketbooks might not have been open to pay for such a book. 4 years to distribute 2,000 books, 30 days to distribute 24,000 books. And if it's about information, I think you can get the point. I will offer another example. Some 10 years ago, I was asked by an American museum that had an enormous collection of photographs to write a commentary for a catalog, precisely knowing that their collection was so slanted to US and European photography, with the rest of the world totally underrepresented. What I wrote at the time was an acknowledgement to the fact that in today's world, such omissions do not carry the same weight that such neglect might have produced in a previous era. In those years, in which we did not have the tools, such as the internet, for instance, and you might want to add real quickly, search engines, because when we talk about the internet, please do not forget the value of search engines, because the fact that information is out there is totally irrelevant unless we have the means with which to retrieve it. Makes all that information available. The absence from such a collection, in essence, made it so that most of us did not exist for practical purposes. Look at the history of photography. Look at the books that throughout the history of photography have been published, and you will find an entire subcontinent, such as Latin America, at the time was represented at the best by the likes of Manuel Álvarez Bravo from Mexico. Later on, you would find other token artists were added, such as Martin Chambi from Peru, or in some instances, even myself or a few other of my good colleagues, to give a semblance that there was an interest in Latin America. Compare such a reality to our publishing project at Zone Zero, which is being produced from Mexico City. Already an unusual concept, where a project of worldwide consequence can be produced outside the traditional centers of photographic culture. namely New York, Paris, London, Los Angeles. I would venture to say that this is some sort of proof that the process of democratization is somehow taking hold. Consider that over the past 3 years, the number of page views, that is the number of pages actually seen in Zone Zero, were 114 million pages, with our viewers coming from 110 countries. Such numbers are impressive in any way you wish to look at them, but more so if you think that this is a result of new technologies and their impact on a redistribution of access to this information on a worldwide scale. But then, if you look at the work that we have shared, you will see that there are a lot of photographers that are not that well known outside their local communities. But nevertheless, with impressive work, and what you have is an opening of floodgates by bringing the work of photographers across all sorts of borders in numbers unheard of before. One of the things I like the most is that Zone Zero is being used by hundreds of teachers of photography all over the world, as our pupils get to see the work of not only the traditional textbooks that were used in the past, produced, of course, you guessed right, in the cultural metropolis. This is the same names that existed always being taught, which obviously perpetuated the hegemony of ideas and concepts of those that control the centers of power. That is no longer happening in the same manner. And I find this to be an important process towards a more democratic process of access to information. Remember that cultural identities are strongly linked to such opportunities to discover the merits of your own cultural heritage versus that of the metropolis. I will give you another example of these technological transitions and what they have in store for photography. In the early 90s, I produced what was the first CD-ROM with continuous sound and images. It was at the time a seminal work insofar as it brought to the computer screen content that was at the time considered to be outside the realm of what one could find on such a monitor. Something personal, something emotional. I am, of course, referring to the work of I Photograph to Remember. I was incredibly happy with the potential of the CD-ROM that allowed one to publish such work and distribute it on something as transportable as a disc. However, the problem became distribution, once again, because it was a physical object. Who would sell such things, was the question. Where can I buy it? At first, there were record stores, then the bookstores, and increasingly other outlets, but it was all quite new and therefore without any sort of experience on the part of the consumer. I think drugs were better distributed than CD-ROMs. Then the internet appeared, and the few stores that did sell CDs evaporated into thin air instantly. I immediately seized upon the opportunity to make myself present on the internet, assuming that the problems of distribution would now take care of themselves, and they largely did. I photographed to Remember to the internet some time later, against the better recommendations of a lot of friends. But in the long run, they were proven wrong. The internet allowed I Photograph to Remember to take on a new direction, which is distribution the world over, something that was well nigh impossible in its previous incarnation as a CD-ROM. The reason why I didn't do it right away was because it was not technologically possible at that time to actually put the transitions and the audio together with the images. But as soon as that was available, we did so. I Photograph to Remember today runs off the internet with the same sort of audio and video integrity it had coming off from the CD-ROM, with one important added advantage. It was no longer necessary to program for different platforms such as Windows and Macs. Everyone could see it. I'm always amused that we get so worked up by the internet and its free access, when in fact the notion of free access to the news information is not such an original format. Here we have a newspaper being posted on the street wall in Dhaka in Bangladesh, and everyone who walks by can read the morning paper for free. This is like a computer screen sans the computer. A new platform has emerged, the iPod, and we have now made a version of I Photograph to Remember for the iPod. And all the options, I think this is one of the most intimate ones. As you can see, the same body of work can migrate from one technology onto the next. I think we have to discover the potential that the iPod has for photographers as a platform to plan for, to use it to make their works available for such audiences. If you project the possibility of all sorts of educational projects, storytelling, entertainment, museum guides, etc., you can find that all of a sudden photographers will be able to tell their stories using a multitude of technologies to make their work known to ever new small platform channels. What am I telling you with this idea? Is that the computer is no longer the only hardware that can deliver photographic images and multimedia. In doing so, I'm telling you that the prices will increasingly come down, expanding the base to which you can make your works available. Cell phones will also become a large market you will find important for your photography. They not only take pictures, but of course also display them, and if they do that, they can also display your stories. And with a few billion phones out there, you just might have something to offer a few hundred thousand people. So if the audience expands, if the prices come down, aren't we in essence dealing with a process of democratization? In closing, let me tell you another project I have been involved with. And this is called Heresies. This project is a retrospective of my own work, which will open in October of 2008 in about 100 different museums opening at the same time across the world. I believe that this project epitomizes many notions that can be put together under the umbrella of democratization of photography. It will not only be presented all those institutions mentioned before, but it will also be presented in web galleries over the internet, all coexisting at the same time, and their intention is not to compete with each other, but rather to complement what one has to offer in relation to the others. Probably no two museums will show the same work that the others will, and that has largely to do with the structure that I offer to the museums, where they can make a selection of whatever images they want to choose from a given data bank, and these are then the ones that they will get prints of. But all this could not be accomplished without the presence of new printing technology, where we can get the utmost quality, better than any analog prints ever made by, at least by me, and with greater longevity than these. For example, if you take into account 200 years to 300 years, that's not bad, is it? While printing on demand becomes a standard. But add to this fact that we have a built-in database with all the images that I've ever produced, and all of this will be accessible to all the people who have a legitimate reason to do so, and are going to have in that database with about 500,000 entries between images and documents. And that is no longer one of those closed databases which are so dear to those who want to protect a body of work for personal power. The disruptive nature of an open database will long be felt, at least in the academic world, as the word democratization comes also creeping into this world as well. The academic world is long on ideas about democracy and quite short on living up to them. All those institutions that kept their cards too close to their vests and don't want to open their archives will be held to new levels of accountability of what could be possible. Much as those monks of yesteryear who saw their power erode with the advent of the movable printing press, we shall now see certain librarians, academics, photographers, or curators having to defend the way they go about in dealing with the archives. Access will be the magic word. The notion that you would make an exhibition and then travel a show where one size fits all never worked, has now found a new tailor-to-order format, which to boot will only cost the venue showing, in my case, $1,000 per venue. Whereas in the past, such a project would cost at least 20 times. But what was that money invested in? In trading, in insurance, and all the things that really have nothing to do much with the need to spend on. Thus, we've been able to reduce the price considerably while making the show made to order. Made to order means that every venue chooses what they want, depending upon the size of the exhibition that they're planning, depending upon what their curators are in turn choosing according to their own agendas. Going in precisely the opposite direction of what traditional shows have been up to now. We expect many people will get the chance to see this work over the duration of the exhibition of at least 8 weeks and do so in one of the most multiple forms of being viewed. I think that this is adding a new dimension of what is the democratization process in the area of photography. Now, none of this would have been even remotely possible without access to all the new tools that the digital age has to offer us. I can remember when in the 70s there wasn't a single space to exhibit photography in Mexico. We led a revolt against the status quo in an art world that would dismiss photography entirely. We also made serious efforts to discover ourselves and to gain some visibility in the world of photography at large. All these efforts, as seen now 40 years later, seem quite basic and romantic, yet they became the cornerstone for many of the things we were able to achieve as time went on. However, it is mainly due to the presence of new technologies that our evolving dreams even had a fighting chance of becoming a reality. As I stand here before you, all I can say with the greatest of humbleness is that the process of democratization is an ever-present reality, at least so in our experience. And in paraphrasing Winston Churchill, it has been said that using digital technologies is the worst form of working except all the others that have been tried before. Thank you.
Well, that's it for our first podcast from the Open Democracy Symposium. If you're interested in following up references that Pedro was making in his talk, you can check them out on his own website, Zone Zero. Now then, during the course of the weekend, Open Democracy were doing a live blogging, and they also recorded an interview prior to the weekend with Pedro Meyer. Links to Pedro's website and the Open Democracy website will be on ProDig. Now then, I'll be getting the other podcasts online just as soon as I get a chance to edit them all. And of course, links to various organisations and the speakers will be on the ProDig website. So that's it for now. I'll see you next time on ProDig. For more news and information, and to sign up for the email list, which is free, go to our website, prodig.org.